Good, very good. Pass out for the vote of adhesion. Thanks. We adjust our workshops according to the level of the person's attendance. So. We have some more experienced persons here tonight, so we'll, as I said, start off in deeper water. Come on, have a seat. Sit on a couch, a chair, wherever you feel comfortable. Sorry. Okay, as you see, we have a full agenda tonight. The main subject, envy, and then prepackaged life, autopilot life, wild and frantic, self-sabotage, underlying commitments, and then supreme joy. Now let's start with envy. You may remember this is a theme from our New Market days. He's from way back. Had this place on Broadway and New Market. How significant is envy in our life? I want you to think about that. And then, as we start, I'll read these ancient mantras. Turn to page one. Sure, you know that even though you don't understand the words, because they're Sanskrit, the sound vibration is very purified. So you just let me chant the mantras, and then we'll proceed from there. Om Jnanachirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manavishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kalamaya Dadati Swapalam Jitam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yata Palakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Vamsajivam Svadvaitam Savadutam Prajna Sanitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vithakam Vikramsha Hey Krishna Karana Sindhu Jina Bandha Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namoskute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Raja Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Suta Devi Pranamani Hari Priye Panchakopatalubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patintanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Go Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Rama Hare, Hare. All right, for those who just walked in, we went over our agenda, which is quite cool for tonight. All these are subcategories of envy. And ultimately, hopefully by the time we finish tonight, we'll wind up here at the Supreme Enjoyer. Now, before we were reciting these beginning mantras, I was asking how many of you remember what it feels like to be envious of someone. First of all, what does it take for you to be envious of someone?
They have something that you want.
Yeah, they have something you want, and you wonder, why you have it, why not me? Has that ever happened in your life before? In terms of that,
I had a friend who was just very calm with everything that happened in their life, and I always wondered what it was that she did to just coast along through everything.
So you were envious.
I was always a skeptic.
And how did it feel, this envy?
Describe it other than envious. It sort of eats inside.
I wish you were miserable. Why you are so calm, not me? Your time will come. Anyone else? Envy? You never envious of anyone?
I actually went to the end of my life because I always wanted to be a car person. I was thinking of watching a film, but I didn't think how people would look.
So you just want to drag them down? Well, you want to be like that, but envy is something stronger. You wish ill to the person.
I think
that's
good
because you're jealous. Yeah, envy and jealousy, they're very close. You never were jealous. Envy or envious of someone? Yeah?
I always envy your colleague.
Your colleague?
You're doing the same job, and you're earning more money than me.
He's earning more money than you, and you're doing the same job. And so, how does it feel inside? Eating up inside, like. And you feel so motivated that you wish he would trip up sometimes? Yeah, right? Yeah, okay, now we're getting. So hard with anyone else? Envy?
I mean, this is my dad, because my dad was like, he had all this year of wisdom behind me, up behind him, and he, you know, when I'd go about something, he'd go, no, son, it's this way, and I'd be like, damn it, I wish you weren't so right all the time. I'd be envious, and, you know, I wish, sometimes wish ill, but, I would sometimes wish ill of him.
Wish ill of it.
Sometimes, yeah, because you know, he was always right.
Yeah, that's what envy does. It's more than just wanting what someone has. It's like you want to push the other person down, too, and make yourself more prominent. Anyone else? Envy? Ever envious, though?
Yes, sometimes the work situation where you're like, that someone gets promoted over you.
And then you start talking to the other workers like, yeah, we got to put this person in this place or place and cut down the tall poppies.
Yeah, I've had situations of envy, but not wanting to put anyone down or do something negative to somebody. Just borderline jealousy rather than you.
A guy had a girl that you wanted. Never happened. Why him, not me?
Yeah, something like that.
And so you never like kind of bad mouth the guy who was trying to bring down the reputation. All right. Now, Before you, our latecomers walked in, I had decided to start at the deep end of the pool because we had a room full of persons who, as we say, they had been here more often. But anyway, I'm not going to change that decision. We will head out for deeper water earlier than we usually do. So, we're going to look at the theme of envy of the Supreme Person and how that could reflect upon our life now. Please turn to page 447, Bhagavad Gita. I'll read the Sanskrit. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Idam tu te guyatamam pravakshyam yasuyade jnanam vijnana sahitam yajyapka mokshase shupa. Would you like to read, Lord?
Translation. The Supreme Personality of God conceived, my dear Arjuna, because you are never envious of me, I shall look up to you with this most refuge and honor to realization, knowing that you shall be relieved from miseries and material systems.
Okay, let's briefly take this element by element. Alright. Just not getting into right now whether there is a Supreme Personality or not. At least we know we are personalities. It could be possible that there's a chief personality, a supreme original personality, but we're not going to deal with that right now. Just look at these words. Because you're never envious of me, I'm going to impart to you this most confidential knowledge and realization. And what's going to be the result of that most confidential knowledge and realization? Upon knowing this, you'll be relieved of the miseries of material existence. Now, I'm just curious, how many of you would be interested in knowledge that relieves all the miseries of material existence? Right? Or maybe you feel that there are no miseries in material existence. Anyone here feel that? It's all in your mind, it's just, life's what you make it. You think that way? No miseries, huh?
I try to remind myself whatever, like, this, we've got the basic social pattern of your upbringing, where you've got these you've conditioned selves for the environment. So, well, this is bad, you should feel bad when this happens, and blah, 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 blah. But, yeah, we're trying to look at it as if it is a situation, as opposed to a good judgment of it, and good or bad.
So, you're not sure that they're miseries of material existence. Really? Have you been born?
Born.
Yeah, did you take birth? You ever seen a baby born? Right. Can you imagine being a baby locked up inside someone's womb? You know, you're conscious after 7 months. So, and then forced out through this narrow aperture. Very painful. The reason why we don't remember birth is because it's so painful we blotted it out. But just think about it. There you are, the child in the 7th, 8th, 9th month of your mother's pregnancy, you're kicking in the womb, and you're ready to come out. It's not that you become conscious as soon as you pop out of the womb, you know. You're also conscious. In the later stages of pregnancy, you're conscious. It's not that as soon as you come out of the womb, your consciousness comes and you start crying. you were conscious inside there for at least a couple of months. So can you imagine what that's like? And you're forced out all of a sudden. It's not that you know what's happening. You're just forced out through this narrow passageway. It's quite a traumatic experience. That's misery. And then, as you get older, you wonder, what about time? Why does the body have to age? Sick. Anyone here been very sick before? Yeah. It's very miserable. Anyone spent time in the hospital more than a day or two? The misery. That isn't hard. It's like, when am I going to get out of here, right? It's like, how much TV could you watch, right? You had a television in the room? That was the only... Yeah. These are miseries. And then, of course, death. Everyone would rather not think about that death, which can come at any moment. That's a misery. And then in between birth and death and old age and disease, there are countless inconveniences and sufferings. You get rejected by people you care for. You get abused, or no one pays attention to you at all. Isn't that also a misery? I won't ask if anyone's ever experienced that. It is a misery. No one pays any attention to you. I don't know, maybe you haven't experienced that. You got all prepared to go to a party or a club, and you got dressed however you're going to dress. If you're a lady, you put on your perfume. If you're a man, I guess men also put on perfume these days. And then you go, and no one pays any attention to you. Ever happened?
I found that with being in a country, and you cannot speak one of a different language, and people's men are asking you that.
Oh, I know one young lady from Russia. She was living in London for a while, and she practically just became totally a nervous wreck because she would dress up and put on her finest and just she'd go on the tube in London, and she said, no one is looking at me. I've never seen this before. No one is looking at me. She actually was about to have a breakdown. Until finally someone told her, this is not Russia, this is London. The British look at you over the top of their newspapers. They don't just ogle, Until she heard that, she was about to have a breakdown,
It's a good job she knows this story.
Why? What happens in Italy?
Well, the men are totally over as
oh, mamma mia, bellissimo.
Anybody ever feel like that? No one is caring for you. No one is looking at you. Often, persons who seem to be the life of the party, they're the loneliest persons. Have you ever seen that? Yes. Persons who you think are so sociable and you envy their social skills. They can just go to any gathering, any club, and just start talking and mixing with people. And it turns out they're the loneliest people because it's all a front. You seen that? All right. So, we have established that there are indeed miseries of material existence. Now, even if you think there are no miseries, still you have to face one fact, that this temporary life will come to an end. Now, how many of you are ready for your temporary life to come to an end? Anyone? No. Ready for your life to come to an end? Why not? Why not? What do you mean you got too much life to live? Yeah. Okay, like what? Okay.
Some of my goals.
Like what, for example? Okay. You sure you're going to have the time to do it? Yeah, open it. Life going to be there so you can get all that you can get?
I think I'd be more optimistic about it if I knew that there was going to be more than 100 years. If like if I knew that maybe I had like 500 or 600 years, then I'd be more optimistic about it.
You don't know that you have 30 years.
Yeah, that's true.
What do you think?
I think that you just, as much as it might sound like a cliche, you just need to optimize every day and achieve as much as you can. Because on the flip side of that, if you just have 400 or 500 years, human nature may procrastinate. So would you actually achieve everything you want to achieve? And if you achieve everything that you think you want to achieve, whatever you want to achieve, you will continue to set through the goals.
Until the axe drops.
Yeah, that's right.
And then?
Well, you still run after to achieve everything you want to achieve.
So you just say, okay, I've achieved everything I want to achieve, so
that
I'm ready to die.
Yeah.
I'm ready to die.
No,
it doesn't work like that. This is the way it works. You never get enough. You always want more and more. It's an addictive process. And the more you get, the more you can't let go. It's not like, well, I achieved all my goals, so now I guess I'll just die in peace. No. There's always something more to do. Just give me 10 more years! 10 more years so I can fulfill this last goal. That's the way it is. Alright, so, now, if indeed there is knowledge that can relieve you of material miseries, why not take it? If someone says to you, I'm going to teach you knowledge so that you'll be relieved of all the material miseries, what would you say? You'd be into it. But there's a catch. As Krishna is saying here, because you're never envious of me, I'm going to tell you these things. Now, how is it that we can be so envious that we have a chance to get knowledge that will relieve all material miseries, but we don't want to hear it? We have a chance to hear knowledge that will relieve all miseries, but because we're envious, we don't want to hear it. It's never happened to you that it was actually someone who could give you something you needed and wanted, but because you were envious of the person, you just, you know.
Well, so you tell if you know it's quite close.
Right, exactly. It's happened. Yeah, exactly. I'd rather suffer than take care of you. Ever happen?
We don't like to condescension as well. We don't like to think that someone's above us.
Right.
And therefore can give us advice.
Right, exactly. I'll do it my way. I know what I'm doing. By your trying to give me an instruction that could relieve all my miseries, that implies you're better than me. I don't like that. That implies you know more than me. I don't accept that. And so, how do we do this in a nice way? Everyone's got to learn their own way. You may know something, but that's good for you. I've got to find my own way. You can imagine you're drowning in the ocean and I throw you a lifesaver, but you refuse to reach for it. You say, no, I've got to do it my way. I've got to go through this. It's a learning process. It's a learning experience. Who do you think you are anyway, throwing me a lifesaver? You think I don't know how to swim just because I'm spitting up water and about to go down? Who's envy? As you said, cut off your nose to spite your face. You're working against your own self-interest. Now, let's bear in mind here that Krishna speaks. You may not know much about Krishna. If you just understand the Supreme Personality. Now, why would I not want to hear from a Supreme Personality? What do you think? Why would you not want to hear from a Supreme Personality?
Ignorance.
Can you explain why?
Probably not appreciating the qualities of the sentiments and the teachings and the course of being materialism.
You don't want to hear it, in other words. That's important. Because as we all know, friends are persons who agree with you, right? That's why they're your friends, right? You don't surround yourself with persons who don't know who disagree with you, right? Yeah. Friends are persons who agree with you. You can always call them up on the phone, right? And they disagree with everything you say. And you feel better, right? That's why they're your friends. When it comes time to going out on a Friday night, you don't call up people who are just going to disagree with you and say, let's go to a pub and talk things over, do you? You find everybody who agrees with you. And then you go order your drinks and talk, and they all, yeah, you're right, yes. We understand. Isn't that how it works? Embarrassing, isn't it? Why else would we not want to hear from a supreme person? You said a very important thing. You don't want to hear that you're wrong, right? You want to feel good about yourself and your decisions.
Because it makes you look at your own inconsistencies.
Makes you look at your own inconsistencies.
Yeah.
You don't want to self-reflect. You don't want to check yourself out.
Or
you don't want to change.
Risk letting go of things.
Right. Because if there is a supreme person, it means you're less important. And it means that this supreme person knows much more than you. And if someone knows much more than you, you're supposed to listen. But you don't want to listen because you want to do things your way, as you said, stubborn. It's like you said you were envious of your father because he seemed to be always right. That's a good one. So what about the original person, the cause of all causes? You can be envious in that same way. I don't want to take any knowledge from any higher source. We know everything. We are good enough to deal with any situation that we go through. Remember when you were teenagers? And it seemed all of a sudden that the adults never knew what they were talking about and only the teenagers knew. Remember that? You know, all of a sudden you just realize, what the hell do these adults know? All of a sudden you realize, why should I listen to my parents? They're just not having any fun. They have with you. It just hit you all of a sudden when you're 13 or 14. Meanwhile, all the adults are saying, yeah, she's going through the teenage years. But you felt like, what are they talking about? They don't understand what I'm going through. It's real what I'm doing. So, that shows you, we can get so caught up in ourselves that even we have access to wisdom, knowledge, we don't want it. We're just so caught up in our own senses, our own mind. So that's why Krishna here is saying, my dear Arjuna, because you're never envious of me, I'm going to teach you. It's very difficult to teach someone who's envious. Have you ever tried? Try talking about yourself to someone who can't stand you? You ever done? No, you don't reveal your mind, you don't reveal your heart to someone who doesn't like you. But you reveal your mind, you reveal your heart to someone who has empathy for you, who wants to understand you. Especially you don't reveal your mind to someone who's envious of you, wants to drag you down. So similarly, Lord Krishna, as the Supreme Person, is saying that same basic psychological truth. Arjuna, my dear devotee, because you're not envious of me, I'm going to teach you. And what am I going to teach you? Knowledge that will relieve you of all the miseries of material existence. That's a big promise. How many of you have started a relationship with someone who said, I am going to relieve you of all material miseries? Anyone had a relationship with that kind of person before? No. Okay. What do they usually promise you? What do they usually promise you? What do they usually promise you?
They'll take care of you or look after you.
How does it happen? What are you saying? Stick with being everything you are. What are you saying?
Something along the lines of that.
What do you say? Oh, you said like that before?
Not myself, no. Oh. Only the guy that does the talk.
Oh, the guy does the talk.
He does the material security.
And what does the woman do?
I don't know, they stick together.
The guy does the material security thing. He makes his presentation, you stick with me, everything will be all right. I'll fight the world for you. Do guys still say like that? And it's outdated. Yeah? Do they still say like that?
Probably not the words, but the emphasis is there.
And but, so, okay, that's what the guy brings to the table, the false promises of security. What does the lady bring to the table?
I guess the guy gave the same kind of security too, so.
I don't think so. Somebody tell him, but the guys are looking for. Each has their agenda. The lady is looking for material security, so the guy has to promise that. And the guy, he's looking for, you know, men things, you know. He's looking for a luscious time, you know. So the lady has to put that on the table. Otherwise, there's no relationship. Right?
True, but
generally, the men aren't into so much material security as the lady is. The men wants. Male security is different. It's like good, steady, entertaining source of sense gratification. That's security for a man. A lady generally wants, you know, nice circumstances, no fears, anxieties, like that. So, in this way, something happens for a while. But how many of you have told someone, I am going to relieve you of all material miseries? Now, if someone said that to you, you wouldn't believe it, right? Because we have no experience of someone being able to do that. Therefore, when we hear Krishna speaking in Bhagavad Gita, the Supreme Personality of Godhead said, because you're never envious of me, I'm going to teach you knowledge that will relieve you from all the miseries of material existence. It's got to be mythology. No one can do that, because no one I know can do that. My friends haven't done it, my family hasn't done it, my partner hasn't done it. That's it. Tough life. Just get what you can get while you can. Squeeze a little pleasure out as much as you can, leave it. What more is there to do? We don't want to conceive that there could be a personality inconceivably more powerful than us, who can give knowledge. Generally, when people think of God, they think of, you know, the whatever, or the creator, or the power that be, or the you know. But no one ever thinks that the supreme person can be the source of the greatest knowledge. No one thinks that. All right. We'll leave this deep end of the pool for a while. Let's move into the middle of the pool. A little bit more shallow. Then we'll take a deep plunge at the end. The supreme enjoyer. And guess what? It's not you. Okay. Prepackaged life. Think about that. How many of you would dare consider that in many ways you're living a prepackaged life? You're fitting into a mold that's already been prepared for you.
I was just writing an essay.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly. I was just at home. I've got a midterm break and I'm going to speak at one of the papers.
What are you studying?
I'm doing psychology, I guess, from this English paper. Doing an essay about Apple, which talks about how since the early 90s, marketing and advertising has just picked up such a rapid pace that every single path we wish to tread has basically been prepackaged and organized for us. And it's just a marketing frenzy. Yeah, it's hard to be an individual.
How would you plan to be an individual in a prepackaged world that's always throwing prepackaged lifestyles at you?
Don't watch too much television or listen to too much radio or. Kind of step outside of how those influences can make your impact.
Well, would you feel you're successful in that, or is it that all?
Well, I think I'm humble, but okay. I'm definitely influenced. But not so comparably.
Comparably?
Yeah.
We won't ask you compare to that. Any other thoughts? Prepackaged life? In what way?
Well, I guess you go through school and do tertiary study, go traveling, family, later on, it's pretty much the same.
Is that satisfying with
you?
But even you can look and see the prepackaging of, let's say, 20 years ago is not present now. All right, you do your tertiary, you do the traveling thing, you have the family, but then does the family stay together? Not according to statistics. It's like in the UK, more than 50% of the children in the UK grow up in single-parent homes. So that's a reality. Without going into the value judgment of it, that's just a reality. So you got at least a 50-50 chance. And,
It's shocking you.
Yeah.
And like marriages, one and two marriages.
Yeah. So you might have in your mind this prepackaged mold, just going to settle down after a bit of a real experience, have a family, and then the kids are brought up and go to school. But the reality is something different. The home splits apart. Fights over assets, fights over custody. This is going on all the time. The person you love, you never want to see again. Anyone ever had that experience? Someone who was so dear to you, suddenly, get out of here, I never want to see your face again. Is that? 1 month you're holding the person tight, oh, you are my everything. The next month, get out of here. It happened. Nah. Yes, of course. It's the way it is. You ever wonder why things are so intense like that? Does it happen to you? What I was describing? So, it makes you wonder. Now, many persons will accept the current prepackaging. Hey, if you just have a relationship for long, it can last. Doesn't work out. Make sure you have a prenuptial agreement before if you do marry, make sure you have the prenuptial agreements, all drawn up so that your assets are retained by you once the marriage ends. Please turn off the mobiles that are very distracted. So, this is a very important point. Would it be satisfying to you to live a prepackaged life and then just one day drop in your tracks, no matter how old you are? Can just be the average housewife in suburbia.
How not to? How do we want to?
Good question. Anyone else? Prepackaged life?
But does it not come back to what we were talking about earlier with regards to your goal setting? As you go through and achieve more of your goals, you see more goals for yourself. So you've eternally got something that you're striving for other than just your prepackaged
life. Eternally? Did you say eternal?
Okay, bad choice of word.
Temporarily.
Temporarily.
That's what's correct here. You're setting goals, but meanwhile, nature has goals already set for you. That you're going to get sick, you're going to get old, you're going to die. Someone else has done some goal setting too. Nature has done it. So here you are, running the race, the pursuit of happiness, but the game's rigged. Thinking of a case, an example, a three-year-old boy at the Starship Hospital, that's called Starship Hospital, and he had bone cancer, and he was dying. Just after his third birthday, he died. And although he was a little boy, he had some kind of awareness, more than a three-year-old boy usually would have, and he would just say to his mother over and over again, "Why, Mom? Why? This is not fair." And the mother didn't know what to say to him. "Why? This is not fair." What would you think about that? Just very sad. But then you look at yourself. Okay, you made it past 3 years of age, but as you get older, you realize there's not much difference between 10 years and 20 years. It all just starts to merge, you know? It's like the difference between a one-hour movie and a two-hour movie. The movie's going to end. So if you go to a two-hour or three-hour movie, you feel like, yeah, this is a long movie. But then it's over. When it's over, it's over. When you walk out of the movie theater, it's hard to remember the difference between a three-hour movie and an hour-and-a-half movie. When it's over, it's over. Think about that. So, we're not going to be satisfied if we're intelligent to live a prepackaged life, and then what? Yeah. Hasn't it been packaged for you, prepackaged for you?
Probably from an outsider's perspective. From an outsider's perspective, I always felt really lost.
Yeah.
It was the outside of
things. Yeah, but still, from the external perspective, prepackaged, yes. Society had its expectations of you, the men had their expectations of you. Right? Young girl, yeah, okay, we got it all figured out. This is what she needs, this is what she wants, this is how we'll deal with her. You ever rebelled against that? Did it do any good? No. Because you had your needs, therefore you had to buy into the system. That is the point. It's like you were saying, you're trying your best to stay out of the box. But as soon as you have needs, you have to buy in. And that's where the marketers have you. They're waiting for you to buy in. They know. They know.
Differently.
Yep.
Paths where they'll come
down. Yeah, they know. Sooner or later, you got to buy in. You have to be really fixed in spiritual knowledge, in Krishna consciousness, to avoid buying in. It's very difficult. You can't just remain aloof from it all, and I'm going to rebel, and I reject the prepackaged life completely. You can say like that. Good topics to talk about at a cafe, but to live that way takes quite some strength and knowledge. Okay. We can go one step worse. Autopilot life. What do you think that is? Autopilot life? It's all
going for the whole thing, the white picket fence, and the 2.3 children, or whatever.
Right. And life is just lived, of course. It's you're like an automaton.
Yeah.
I'm going to school. I'm going traveling. I'm going to have a
family. Oh, and the previous generation's footsteps. So you might have your life really mapped out for you.
Exactly.
Can the preschool, the university, that white collar girl, provide with money and put it in?
And you just look around, what's everybody else doing? That's what I'm going to do. And when a plane flies on autopilot, the pilot and co-pilot, they don't have to work the controls, so to speak. The computer just flies the plane. So similarly, do we dare to look at ourselves and see how much of our life is just going on automatic? Get up, go to work, go to school, get a partner, get a car, get a flat, travel you. Automatic. It's a little scary when you think about it. Doesn't it? But what keeps you going on autopilot? You have needs, right? And you're looking for the easiest way to have your needs fulfilled. Please focus on that point. You're looking for the easiest way to have your needs fulfilled. For most people, as long as their needs are being fulfilled, then they say, autopilot, prepackaged, doesn't matter. My needs are being fulfilled. And that's what the marketing people know. Sooner or later, you're going to want your needs fulfilled. And then you're going to have to come to us. None of you have ever played that game with, with a temporary partner, TSO, temporary significant other? Sooner or later, you're going to have to call me up. No one's ever played that game? You can act independent now, but when the weekend comes, you're going to have to give me a ring. Yeah, no one's ever played that? You never done that? It's more than playing hard to get. It's being calculated. You're going to want me around. Whether you know it or not, you'll realize. Never done that? Yes. Hesitation means yes. You've never done that?
What sort of manipulation?
I don't know if you call manipulation. It's just like,
No, I almost have never done it.
Yeah. You've got your needs. You're not going to find any better person than me, at least for, the near future, so. Never played that card.
No.
You've done it. Not as fair. So, when people live their life under autopilot, they're easily manipulated, easily exploited. The only way that you can avoid a prepackaged autopilot life is if you don't have the needs that put you in the position of being exploited. Now, maybe some of you have rebelled. No prepackaged life, no autopilot life. It's going to be wild and frantic. Anyone try that one? It's going to pop the cork on the bottle and just, yeah? How long did it last?
Yes.
I'm just going to paint the town red my way. 27 years, huh? So was it enlivening and enriching and, enthralling? What was...
It was like a roller coaster.
Roller coaster.
So it was a year ago, last year, so
What was it like at the peak of the roller coaster ride?
Exciting.
Why? What was exciting?
Well, I used to just look at the end of the office and have the
What would you do? That was exciting. Well, what would you do that's different?
I try not to miss that sales part.
So what does that mean?
So what would
one have instead of that? Like, what did you do instead of that?
Well, while everyone was saying, I want to do this, and everybody else can do this, so I'd be like,
Friday, Saturday night would come, and you would just sit there questioning.
No.
Just coming back to autopilot and so on. So you're saying that anybody that to be part of that whole group of people that are on the phone, usually anybody that really buys a branded pair of shoes or wears clothing or buys a box of cereal or participates in anything that's boxed up or prepackaged or what have you, is living the autopilot life, regardless of whether you're bungee jumping one day and doing all these extreme things or not living in the norm. Regardless of how you package it, you're still living on autopilot.
Yes.
Just going into these things. It's only your perception and your take on things.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Like the guys who do the extreme sports. That's different. But no, someone's got it all figured out, that lifestyle all figured out, and making money off of it. So it's really hard, as you're pointing out, to avoid this. Even when we think, I'm rebelling, I'm different, you'll find that you're not really in touch with your real self, and you're just living a prepackaged rebel lifestyle. It's really embarrassing, I know, to think about these things. So the so-called wild and frantic ones, I just do whatever I feel, whatever comes to me, I do.
Eventually they'll come back and buy a car and a house somewhere.
Yeah.
Whether the house is at the beach or on the subway, they'll still come back and bring back the
restaurant. Exactly. I've been on every continent in the world for 25 years. I've seen that movie again and again. Sooner or later, you just snap back into the pattern. Because it's a lack of understanding of the real self. You can't really be different. Sooner or later, who is it? There was in New Zealand, I forgot his name. I think he became the mayor of Invercargill back in the 70s. He's a real, a real alternative hero in the 70s. What's his name again? Yeah, everyone knows about him. Yeah, so I was reading his life story, a bit of it, and he was a big countercultural alternative leader and. Leading student uprisings and things like that. And he's still a bit of a folk hero. Yeah. So he was saying how, he wanted to drop out of society. So he and his partner, they bought a little farm. They're growing their own veggies and wearing no clothes. It was all part of the revolution. And he said, one day, he and his wife, in their veggie garden with no clothes, living the dropout lifestyle, just looked at each other and said, "It's cold out here. And we don't have any electricity. We can't even listen to the radio." And they just looked at each other and both felt the same thing. "Let's get out of here. Let's get real." And so they just snapped right back into, regular material life. He just described it so graphically. There they were. No clothes, just gardening, their hands in the soil, no electricity, I just realized, this doesn't work. We're cold. You want to listen to the radio. You don't have electricity. So much for the wild and frantic. Now, what about self-sabotage? How many of you can see that you might have goals, but you're not acting in a way to achieve your goals? Just like you might say, you want to lose weight. And why are you telling everyone you want to lose weight? I'm sure you see this all the time. You're eating chocolate. Or you might say you want to save money. And while you say your goal in your life is to save money, you're spending it here and there. Anyone can remember being like that? You remember? Yeah. Like what, for example?
Yeah, we want to save money, but I'll just spend something there.
What do you spend it on?
Eating everything and buying electronics things.
That's the guy's trip, is gadgets and gizmos. The ladies, you know, shoes and cosmetics. Any ladies here have more than 20 pairs of shoes? Yeah, it's quite normal. Why? Why more than 20? Right, it's as if the ladies think the guys are looking at their feet. How many men here care what kind of shoes the woman's wearing? The last thing on your mind, ooh, wow. But you can't tell the women that until they buy 20, 30 pairs of shoes, you know? It does something for them. The guys can care less.
Huh?
But you want to feel that you look good, right? And then, of course, the men, they just buy endless gadgets, you know, latest cell phone, this, that, the other. Ladies don't understand that. Why do men have to constantly get gadget after gadget? It's happened to you? You see, the guy just buy this, buy that.
To be honest with you, I've probably found myself in relationships where I'm the best one.
Alright, so you have goals, but in your own way, you're sabotaging your goals. This is quite common. Think about it. Maybe you have some very high, sublime, exalted goal. Anyone here have a very high, exalted goal? Besides, you know, making money or getting a big house or getting a flash car. Anyone have a sublime, magnificent goal?
I have something.
So, can you see how often you sabotage your own goal?
Yeah, frequently.
Also?
Yeah, I sort of do it in two ways, and that's, I'm stepping that way, definitely, but I know I could be doing more. But then also kicking myself for not doing more, but it's like a double whammy.
So it's like, how serious are we really about our own life? It gets to be embarrassing sometimes, doesn't it? Even our own goals that we have designed for ourselves, we sabotage. Now, let's look at the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Let's see if I can find the page quickly. Page 156. Let's see what we're up against. Text 67 on page 156. I'll read the Sanskrit. Indriyanam hicharatam yanmano nutvidhiyate tarasya hariti pragyam vaya naam evambasi. Simon, you want to read the translation?
Yeah. As a boat on the water is swept away by a strong wind, even one of the roaming sense upon which the mind focuses can carry away levels of
voice. So, think about that. Just one of the senses of your body that your mind focuses on can carry away your intelligence. you just think about your senses, just one sense, my tongue, I'd like to taste such and such, and your intelligence is gone. Anyone here a fan of chocolate? Yeah, so they still have this store in Auckland called Death by Chocolate. Yeah? In Burn Bay, it's there?
Yeah, yeah.
It's still there.
Yeah. Well, Mission Bay.
It used to be on Jervois Road, and they moved now. Okay. So, what happens to you when you go by a chocolate shop?
I kind of shake my pocket to see if I've got enough change, you know, like this metal change in my pocket.
Your tongue just takes a hold of you and your intelligence just leaves. Now, you can see that about your tongue, but all the senses are like that. Your eyes want to see things. Your ears want to hear things. Your nose wants to smell things. And then the sense of touch wants to feel things. And as soon as you focus your mind on just one sense, your intelligence is lost, is carried away. Because you're just caught in the expectations of that sense getting pleasure. Do you remember this happening? The power that's there of just meditating on one sense. You've got five senses. Actually, according to Bhagavad Gita, you have six senses. From the standard of Vedic knowledge, the mind is also considered a sense. The mind feels things. You ever had it? I'm sure you can recognize it. You can feel things with your mind. So it's considered from the viewpoint of Bhagavad Gita to be a sense. But anyway, you want to consider just five senses. You can get into it so much. What my skin is going to feel, and your intelligence is just gone completely. You recognize that happening? And then what do you tell yourself to compensate?
It's all right because it feels good.
It's all right because it feels good. And then what?
Just waiting for the next desire.
Wait for the next possible sensation. That's how most people live their life. Waiting for the next possible good sensation. It's embarrassing, isn't it? Even in relationships, you look at other persons in that way. When are you going to give me the next good sensation? Your mental, physical, combination of both. Yes, isn't it like that? Or not? What do you think?
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah. And then you call it love. Wasn't it last week we were discussing?
Sorry.
Yes, yes. Has anyone tried it? Have you tried it?
No.
Anyone? Have you tried it? You weren't here last week, so we were talking about love, the prepackaged definition of love. So I asked everyone to try an experiment to their partner or whoever. Instead of saying, I love you, be more accurate and say, I desire you. And the other person can say in response, I desire you too. And everything is clear. What do you think? Yeah.
It doesn't always work that way.
What do you mean?
Well, it's not always mutual.
All right, well, at least this way is honest and accurate. Okay. I desire you.
I don't desire you.
What?
I desire you. I desired you yesterday, but not today. I desire someone else more.
But at least it's more accurate than the so-called love, you know. Because what people call love, for the most part, Now, we're not being cynical, we're just being realistic. For the most part, what they call love is the expectation that you're going to give me good feelings to my mind and body. And then I want to show you the care of giving you good feelings to your mind and body. After all, what more can you do for a person than try to give them good feelings for their mind and body? In terms of an ordinary relationship. Can you do anything more? Anyone know anything more you can do for someone than try to give them good feelings for their mind and body? And call that care, call it love. Is it?
Help them grow.
Help them grow. In what way? They're growing it.
You might meet somebody and like to assist them and help bring them in this way.
And well, and according to what conception? Material conception? Be stronger in your body.
No, just even soul level.
Huh?
Soul level?
Soul level, but that requires knowledge. You just can't call anything the soul and then say, I'm contributing to your soul development. What is the soul? What is the body? You have to know the difference. Otherwise, the so-called love just involves trying to help someone get a better mental and physical feeling. Or no. Hey, maybe you have an alternative idea. What did you say, Rob?
I'm not really much sure. I didn't agree. Once again, we're preconditioned by what we're taught to believe is right and wrong. And we tend to give because we want to receive rather than being true givers.
Have you ever tried giving to someone who didn't give you anything in return? Is it sustainable?
It's pleasurable, but not always sustainable.
I don't care how you treat me, I'm just going to give. You got it?
Yeah.
How long did it last?
Yeah.
Right. What happened after a while?
Just now.
Why?
Because I think things come to a
crunch time comes. So, like, there was someone who didn't care for you, but you just made up your mind to care for that person. And then after a while, you gave up, right? Because I know exactly, no reciprocation. You want something in return. Therefore, I say it's better to say, I desire you. Put your expectations on the table. Now, this is a different way of looking at things. This is not to say that there's never anything that's real love. But Bhagavad Gita will teach you that you won't find that real love on the material plane of life, the material platform of life. If you want to find real love, you've got to get beyond the body and mind. Because as long as you're treating someone like they're the body and mind, and you're the body and mind, there's going to be these mental, physical expectations. Real love is beyond the mental, beyond the physical. And that's the whole point of Bhagavad Gita. So, if you can assist someone in awakening their spiritual identity, that is considered real love. If you can help someone in their enlightenment, in their developing their Krishna consciousness, that's considered real love. Because that is something that is eternal. It doesn't end when the body and mind end. That's the point. So unless we have some experience in the realm of things that has no beginning and end, our so-called efforts to love are always doomed to a temporary, frustrated effort. Let's look at page 157. Text 69. Yadasha Sarva Bhutanam Tasya Jagati Sanyamin. yasyam jagati bhutani sanisha pashyato gune. Would you like to read that?
What is night for all beings is the time of awakening for the self-controlled, and the time of awakening for all beings is night for the introspective sage.
So there's always going to be this incompatibility, this difference between those who are spiritless and those who are materialists. It's always going to be there. You can read the purport also.
There are two classes of intelligent man. One is intelligent in material activities for sense gratification, and the other is introspective and awake to the cultivation of self-realization. Activities of the introspective sage or thoughtful man are night for persons material absorbed. Materialistic persons remain asleep in such a night due to their ignorance of self-realization. The introspective sage remains alert in the night of the materialistic men. The sage feels transcendental pleasure in the gradual advancement of spiritual culture, whereas the man in materialistic activities, being asleep to the self-realization, dreams of varieties of sense pleasure, feeling sometimes happy and sometimes distressed in his sleeping condition. The introspective man is always indifferent to materialistic happiness and distress. He goes on with his self-realization activities undisturbed by material reactions.
So can you see that you would be in one category or the other? And these two categories don't mix very well. What is day for one is night for the other, and vice versa. One is awake to opportunities for material achievement, sense gratification. The other is awake to opportunities for enlightenment, increased awareness of the spirit soul and the supreme soul. So, tomorrow morning when you wake up, I'd like you to do this exercise. As soon as you open your eyes and the alarm clock goes off, ask yourself, what am I awake to? Am I awake to the material reality or am I awake to the spiritual reality? Ask yourself that question. Remember Krishna's words in Bhagavad Gita. What is night for all beings is the time of awakening for the self-control, and the time of awakening for all beings is night for the introspective sage. So which night are we in? Are we in the night of dense darkness based on no knowledge of the self and the supreme self? Now, finally, I told you we were going to get back to the deep water.
Can I just ask you a question?
Yes.
To bring something up. Do you think when people who don't really have a lot of knowledge read something like that, it can cause them a hell of a lot more problems than it would have if they hadn't read it at all? In terms of just then starting to deny themselves all those things and jumping on the Bhagavad Gita prepackaged life without having knowledge to back it up, you know, just starting to deny themselves six different things.
Right.
Go into total unhappiness.
Right. You have to know what you're doing. You can't just jump into anything without cultivating knowledge. That's the whole point of Bhagavad Gita. To break all the prepackaging and take it straight from the supreme source. You've got to take it from somewhere. So why not take it from the best source? The whole point of Bhagavad Gita is to convince you that there is the best source and you take it from there and you get the best results. That requires knowledge and experience. So it's not a question of being fanatical. Oh, all of a sudden I realize it's all an illusion out there. My whole life's going to change. No. You have to have something positive to replace the illusion with. In fact, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains that you may actually understand that it's all illusion, quote unquote, and you may try to restrain yourself from it, but you'll fail. Unless you have a higher spiritual pleasure, you won't be able to stay away from the lower material pleasures. That's stated right in Bhagavad Gita. Unless you get the higher taste, you're always going to be victimized by the lower tastes, no matter how much you try.
So read all of the Bhagavad Gita before doing anything. A little bit of knowledge can be harmful as well.
Read the whole thing from cover to cover. And then you think. Think about it. As you're reading it, it'll rework your intelligence. It'll rewire the circuit board.
You can associate with the devotees too.
So now, supreme enjoy. This is probably the most radical understanding of the supreme. Generally, if we think about the supreme at all, we think of an all-pervading force. We think about the creator. We think about maintainer. It's like when I was a little boy, I was taught one song at church. Who made the mountains? Who made the sea? Somebody bigger than you or me. And then, if you were going to eat some food, you'd say your grace, you know. I remember I had a relative in my family. He was kind of like a deacon at a church. And so, whenever we had our family gatherings, he would say these long prayers before the holiday dinner, you know. And all the kids hated it because he just wanted to eat. And the young guys go on and on. Lord, we've gathered here, and we want to thank you for this. We want to thank you for that. And all the family that come from so far to be together on this day. At least, you know. And all the kids are just like, you want to get into the ham and the turkey and the steak. And but there was one holiday a year where he would shorten his prayer. In the States they call it Thanksgiving. So that was the one day a year when the table was piled high with so much food that he just couldn't do his 10-minute prayer. He would just have he had a short mantra, just a very short prayer on that one day, which is, good Lord, good meat, good gravy, let's eat. That was it. So, once again, sounds very primitive, but he had a conception of God as the provider, the maintainer. He's given us all these nice animals for us to sink our teeth into, and the animals have no souls, they're just there for us to eat. So, this is a much higher conception. God as the supreme enjoyer. Meaning, a conscious person who enjoys unlimitedly. That is the understanding of the supreme as presented in Bhagavad Gita. And it's far beyond understanding the supreme as the creator, the all-pervading energy, or the maintainer. The supreme enjoyer. Someone who enjoys unlimitedly. Therefore, we get envious. When we think about our attempts to enjoy, we see there are always problems. You have a relationship, there's a problem. Even you have money, you try to spend it, there's a problem. You get something that doesn't work right. How many of you know the frustration of picking out something you want to buy after so much research and so much comparison shopping, and you get it, and it doesn't work right? It's frustrating. It's frustrating. So, every way we try to enjoy, you can find there's a problem. Now, if we can see that we have this enjoying tendency because we're part of something bigger that also has this enjoying tendency, then we're starting to understand reality. We're conscious entities, but we're very tiny. If we can see that we're part of a supreme conscious entity that's unlimited, then we can see that whatever little enjoying tendency I have must be there unlimitedly in the supreme consciousness. So that is the understanding of the supreme as the supreme enjoyer. Then you become very curious and interested. What's that like? What is the supreme enjoyer like? It kind of puts you in your place once you get over your envy. At first you might be just envious. Ah, the supreme enjoyer, impossible. But look at yourself and how you're trying to enjoy in your little way, this way, that way. But why do you deny that there could be a supreme unlimited enjoyer who never has a problem enjoying? But notice how your mind just shuts that out. Nah, nah. Why do you do that? It's actually envy. Nah, nah. Our enjoying endeavors are the ultimate. There's no one who can enjoy more than us. We're doing okay. My little bitty plans for enjoyment, they're very important. But as soon as you start to think that there could be a supreme enjoyer, then you become humbled. Wow, maybe I don't know what I'm doing. To think that there could be an entity that enjoys unlimitedly, what's that like? Then you go into a completely different dimension. And to grasp that reality, you've got to be free from what we discussed at first, envy. That is why Krishna tells Arjuna, because you are never envious of me, I'm going to teach you. The psychological reality is we're envious subconsciously that there is a supreme enjoyer. So we spend birth after birth in the material world trying to prove we can enjoy. Can you catch yourself doing it? Birth after birth. I'm going to enjoy, I'm going to be happy. We're trying to imitate. But we can't because we're too tiny. Now the whole point of Bhagavad Gita is to get us to connect in harmony with the Supreme Consciousness. And then, although we are tiny and limited, because we're cooperating harmoniously with the Supreme Unlimited, we can taste the same quality of pleasure, but never the same quantity, because we're tiny. In other words, you can enjoy equally to Krishna, but you can't enjoy the same amount, because you're tiny. You can enjoy the same quality, but not the same quantity. Just like a drop of seawater has all the qualities of the whole ocean, but there's a difference in magnitude. A drop is just a tiny thing, the ocean is immense. But qualitatively, the drop of seawater is equal to the ocean. Similarly, as conscious entities, we're equal to the Supreme Consciousness in terms of quality. And we're entitled to enjoy equally, but we can't match the Supreme Consciousness in terms of the quantity. So these are some of the mysteries that Bhagavad Gita explains. You can get to the point of devising your whole lifestyle in terms of harmony with the Supreme Enjoyer. That is the most fascinating lifestyle technique. Because generally people think, we're just entities on our own, you gotta do your own thing, and do the best you can, achieve, acquire, goal setting. They don't understand the whole system they're part of. That you're a conscious entity, but you're very tiny. You're part of the supreme conscious entity. Now, what is your relationship, and how do you act in that relationship? These are the most important questions which form the actually productive life. All right, it's been interesting discussion. Learned a lot of things. That's why I ask questions. I learn from your answers. I hope that some of you will indeed take up a study of Bhagavad Gita, and in this way, you'll find there's actually nothing like it. It'll take, for most of you, it'll take a while to get used to it, a few pages, but once you start to move, you start to move through it. You had an experience, Ron, and you started getting into it. It's like a little bit. Yeah, but then all of a sudden what happened? Something clicked, huh? And gradually built up. Yes, for others, of course you're older.
That's why we're.
But others, you know, after 20 or 30 pages, you start feeling your brain reworked. And you find yourself caught up in this symphony. Because there's so much in Bhagavad Gita that is beyond conventional knowledge. You'll recognize some things there as familiar, but there's a lot that's unfamiliar. So it takes a while to get used to that. It's like an exciting discovery. But once you become acclimated, you're walking in a different realm. It's quite exciting. How is it for you, Simon, when you started?
First couple of chapters was pretty outgoing. And then I used to jump from chapter to chapter. Yeah. And I found that in the end it was very, very useful. It was some very, very good teaching.
So finally you settled into just page after page.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did the old fashioned way.
All right. So, thank you all very much.